Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 8th of July, recording at 9:24 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick review of the week. Here, in terms of stock markets, it's been a pretty good rally, extending last week's gains, and some of those actually started in the week before last. But until today, and we saw a little pause in some of Asia, although not the China indices, not Japan, and also Australia was still firm in here today, up over 1%. But the game changer for the day was the U.S. non-farms payroll data, which came in much weaker than expected. And that reversed gains in Europe, where we saw some sharpish declines, mostly over 1%, including the FTSE 100, and whopping declines of 2.5% for the Spanish IBEX market and 3.5% for the Italian MIB market. Brazil closed down over 1%. Wall Street had Wall Street actually managed to claw back most of its losses. It's still close to the downside. Excuse me. But only 9 points by the S&P, when I think it was down at over 20 at one stage. And elsewhere on the week, long-dated government bond prices were generally a little bit firmer, particularly today when Wall Street weakened. In terms of currencies, the resources currencies have generally been stronger this week, as have the Asian developing economies, so that's ex-Japan. I should say growth economies, ex-Japan. Those currencies have all been firmer, or for the most part have been firmer this week. The dollars fallen back against the yen here today, as have most currencies. The yen had been soft earlier in the week, but has rallied on the news. And what else? Gold. It's been an interesting week for gold and other precious metals, with some decent technical rallies. And gold continued that here today, up nearly $12 to $15.44, so it didn't blink when the bad employment data for the U.S. came out. Actually, it did the opposite. It rallied on that news. Industrial metals were mostly firmer. Copper had a good run this week, but had those gains clipped towards the close today, but it's still closing out the week at nearly 440. Crude oil. We've had a sharp rally in Brent on the week, although it was off a little bit here. I think it's 118.23. NYMEX had also, now it's NYMEX, the WTI crude had also rallied this week, but fell back today, $2.32. Natural gas had weakened on the week, but rebounded fairly well today, up 88 cents. Grains and beans stronger this week. Corn particularly strong here today, up 21.5 cents. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, taking stock markets, It's been one heck of a technical rally. I think I've mentioned in the last at least couple of audios that we were getting up towards, we were short-term overbought in some of these markets, and certainly in the U.S., which had marched straight, impressively straight back up to the higher side of the range. Now, it'd be surprising if we didn't see a bit of a pause here. Overall, I've described the technical action as really being quite favorable. Now, we are still in a period of seasonal underperformance, which is usually, though, punctuated by a summer rally, and we've certainly seen seasonal underperformance and also a summer rally in the last couple of weeks. I think the rally will be challenged in the short term, just as it is a bit overbought. But we have to remember, there's still a lot of liquidity sloshing around in the system, despite the interest rate increases in the growth economies, some of which are continuing, with China having a rate hike this week. But some commentators, including this one, feel that we're near the end of that cycle. But we can't be sure about that because the people who are hiking the rates can't be sure about it. They'll be looking at their own growth figures and particularly their own inflation figures. Now, therefore, I think one should expect a little bit more choppy, rangy activity in these stock markets. But I don't think we'll get a retest of those June lows. Now, if we were to see, if I'm too optimistic, if we were to see a retest, let alone a break beneath those June lows, that would really open the door to a weaker environment overall, and certainly a further correction beyond what we've actually seen. I've said on a number of occasions that as long as those June lows hold, I wouldn't worry too much about it. But again, and put this in the short-term context, that we are a bit overbought here right now. I don't want to exaggerate the importance of the non-farm payrolls here, although it was a bit of a shocker, but it also falls into the statistic du jour category, or let's call it the statistic of the week. But there's lots of data coming out all the time. Next week we begin the earnings season for the second quarter earnings reports, and kicking off with Alcoa on the 11th, I believe. And I think that we may see a few more misses in terms of analysts' expectations, although they have downgraded those expectations somewhat. So we'll see. But with the short-term overbought condition, I think markets are susceptible to a bit of a pullback and consolidation in this environment. But overall, I still think we are on track for that stronger fourth quarter of the year and a stronger and to carry also into 2012. But and there are lots of buts in this type of environment, more than I would like. But I've got to call it as I see it. I'm not trying to hedge any of this. I hope you appreciate. But I've mentioned that crude oil is the biggest concern, and I'm not happy to see Brent back up at over 118, and nearly touched 120 today before Wall Street weakened. Now, that's uncomfortably high, and that's more important globally than the WTI price, as I've mentioned before. And if that were to continue on up, then that would greatly increase the prospects for a decline back to at least test the June lows for stock markets. In the short term, that Brent looks overbought to me, and therefore I'm hopeful that that will get a pullback. But the global economy needs a pullback and lower prices overall, because that adds inflationary pressures in the short term. That will worry central banks, and it also has a medium to longer term deflationary impact. And if you want evidence of that, just look at the way that spike to the upside, which I think peaked in July of 2008, when crude oil, WTI, and Brent got up into the 147 area, and that was a far bigger contributor to the global recession, and not least in the growth economies, in my opinion, than the banking scandal. Although that was in the whole CDO fiasco, although that was bad enough, heaven knows. So, where do we go on a medium to longer term basis? Well, as far as the U.S. economy is concerned, we are barely into the third year since the end of the last recession, which we can put optimistically at around the second quarter of 2009. And historically, and I've mentioned this before, historically it usually takes at least 3 to 5 years for an economy to recover from a credit crisis thumping, and this was a big one in terms of the recession, as you know, because it had not only the credit insolvency crisis, but it also had the spike in commodity prices to contend with. So I think we have to be prepared for a very slow growth in much of the West, certainly in the United States, and certainly in most of Europe, really for quite some time. There's just too much debt around, and that's not going to change quickly. It's impossible for that to happen, and the recovery that has occurred to date has been described as being on steroids, somewhat accurately, in the form of all the quantitative easing programs that have taken place. Now, when looking at the U.S. stock market, though, we have to remember that it's about companies. One buys companies, not the economy. Now, the economy can be a big problem for purely domestic companies, but the companies that we like that are in the Fuller Money secular themes are the U.S. multinationals, which, and I would go for the successful ones. And if you want to know which are the successful ones, well, just look at the price charts. They'll be outperforming the S&P for sure. And the U.S. multinationals that are leveraged to the Asian-led growth economies. Those companies we do like very much, and they are not necessarily going to be dragged down, and haven't been dragged down by the global economy. And I beg your pardon, by the U.S. economy. What's interesting about them is that companies really got their act together pretty quickly following the terrifying 2008 experience. They demand, which has let go of a lot of workers. They cut inefficient units. They husbanded cash. They built up their balance sheets, which are now very strong. So in many respects, their balance sheets are the complete opposite of what you see for the U.S. government. And they don't have all those entitlements and extended welfare programs to pay. They can do business, they can manufacture where they want to, and sell where they have the strongest markets. That's really all over the world. So they're in good shape, and we like them, and they have also benefited additionally from the weak dollar in terms of consolidated earnings. Now, what we like most of all, we like those companies a lot, but other Fuller Money themes that we like a great deal, the Asian-led growth economies. China and India have been laggards recently, but China's valuations are extremely attractive. It's still facing that headwind of the higher interest rates and economies that face an extensive monetary tightening seldom see their stock markets move up until investors are able to anticipate a change in monetary policy. And I think we're quite close to that as far as China is concerned. And it's good to see the somewhat steadier action in that stock market recently, but it may take a little more time. And it certainly will. I think what we need to look for to see that China is almost certainly turning around and moving higher is when the monetary authorities there eventually announce that rates are on hold, and that'll almost certainly be the precursor to some cuts in rates. So when they become more concerned about GDP growth than inflation, we'll get the change in monetary policy. And that will occur against a background of what are historically really quite inexpensive Chinese equities. And that should be mark the beginning of a very strong bull run in this extremely important market. And even a Chinese growth recession, what does that do? Brings GDP down to 7-8%. So we like that. We like China very much for the long term, and one's not paying too much for it right now. India still beset with a holdover of those corruption problems, and a tired government headed by an intelligent, highly intelligent, but crikey, he's older than I am, and a somewhat tired prime minister who has a daunting job. And that is still a bit of a problem for India, but there's a good chance that India too is close to a change in its monetary policy. And we've been really seeing tightening all year. They've got a good monsoon. It's not complete yet, but we're getting a little bit above average rainfalls, and that's critically important for India. And it's a phenomenal story for all the reasons that I've mentioned before over the years in terms of the long-term potential, and I won't try to review all of those now. And but India does need to hold those June lows, and I think there's a decent chance of that. It's impressive to see the ASEAN stock markets push through, or some of them at any rate, led by Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines, push through to new all-time highs this month. And Indonesia, I noticed, was up again today. We like that sector very much. They benefit from Asia's growth. They participate, of course, in Asia's growth, and they also benefit from China's rapacious demand for all commodities. Now, what else to mention here? Let's go on to the long-dated government bonds. The Western central banks are not going to raise interest rates very much. The ECB did raise its rates by a quarter of a percentage point this week, but they're still historically very low. They're negative real interest rates, in other words, below the rate of inflation, as they certainly are in the USA. And that remains a tailwind for equities generally. So again, companies, particularly companies that have high, reasonably covered yields, companies that are leveraged to the global economy, should be pretty good performers over the medium to longer term. Long-dated government bonds, I don't like because of all that huge debt overhang, but the yields are unlikely to run up dramatically anytime soon in the companies in the countries rather that are regarded as having relatively sound economies. I hesitate as I say that, thinking out loud here. The I'm not talking about bond markets where we've seen runaway gains in yields among some of those peripheral European countries. Portuguese 10-year yields hit new highs, up over 12% earlier this week. The UK has so far gotten a favorable nod from the IMF in terms of its attempt to get its debt under control. The USA less so, but there's been a lot of quantitative easing going on, and even though QE2 has expired, and to say that the Fed was using that QE2 to support its bond markets, and it is to keep long-term interest rates down, because that would be and they're particularly concerned about that 10-year rate, because if that were to rise quickly, that would just compound an already very bad mortgage situation overall, and with so many mortgages being underwater and overextended homeowners struggling to make payments at a time when the economy is weak. And the Fed is also reinvesting the interest on its rollover positions that it does hold. So it's still continuing with a program to buy bonds. Now, that is nowhere near as big as the going forward, it's nowhere near as big as the QE2 actually was, but we still have commercial banks keeping an eye on those charts, who are willing to step in and buy the long-dated government bonds to play the yield curve, because they can borrow from the discount window from the Fed at a very, very low rate, practically well, negligible cost of money, and leverage that up in the bond market. Now it becomes an increasingly risky game, and we saw quite a sharp shakeout in those long-dated government bond prices late in the last part of June and in the early part of July, and that would indicate that a number of those positions were being cut right back. But today, some of them were no doubt reinstated here again. Overall, I expect choppy action in terms of these bond prices and bond yields for a while longer. But I regard, in terms of yields, I regard it all as bottoming out in a base building process, which I've said all along would be lengthy. And I've just explained, when I was talking about the Fed, one of the reasons, and the banks, what are commercial banks, one of the reasons why it will be a lengthy process overall. And then we also have the weak US economy overall. But those inflation pressures are building up, the commodity inflation pressures. And therefore, my feeling really is that the next next important move in that long-dated government bond market, which is choppy, rangy right now, will be for a rise in yields, with bond prices coming down. Now, I'm talking my book to a certain extent. I can be objective about that. Because I'll also say that I'm playing a bit of a risky game in here with those shorts, because you have to stump up the interest rate. And if they're going to be ranging sideways, that can be expensive in the 30-year bond. You're paying over 4.25% for the privilege of dubious privilege of being short. So the timing's important on that, and I don't want to digress, but in my own trades, I really should have traded it a little bit more actively. I'm annoyed, for instance, not to have had some stops in here today to take me out of my shorts where they were showing profits on the September position, and instead of seeing those move back into a losing position overall. That's my problem. And what you're more concerned about with, I'm sure, is the outlook for longer term interest rates. They are not going to stay down at these low levels in perpetuity, that's for sure, unless you really do feel, as some people do, that the outlook is a replay of what Japan has been going through over the last 20 years or more. I don't. I think the inflationary pressures will be stronger, and that the GDP growth will eventually be stronger. But no one knows for sure. Now let's move on to currencies here, and I'll start with the ultimate currency, which is gold, hard money, and it's still in that ranging mean reversion phase overall, but very steady. It's been a very good week here for gold bullion. If we were to see more stock market weakness over the next few months on the way to mid-October, if we were to see, it's not a forecast, but if we were to see more stock market weakness rather than just a little pullback, but above, but finding support above the June lows, and that additional weakness, were it to occur, could cause some contagion selling in stock markets. You've seen it before. If stock markets are really weak, then people sell anything they can sell, if only to meet margin costs elsewhere, or because they fear that we get some sort of replay of 2008. I just mentioned that because, you know, gold is not immune to profit taking, and particularly when you have large investment positions in the metal, as is the case today. My feeling is that those large investment positions are justified, and that investors will be rewarded in the fourth quarter of this year and beyond, if not sooner. So I think that technically it looks very attractive overall. But as I say, we may see a little bit more ranging here before the next run to the upside, which, if the seasonal pattern holds true, will commence in September. My view is very much that this is still a secular bull market, and I think that, like most secular bull markets, it will end in a blaze of glory, which will be parabolic acceleration on the price charts. I don't think we're anywhere near that point yet. The ultimate demise of the gold secular bull market, I think, will be caused by higher interest rates, and that will require significantly higher short-term interest rates in the U.S. economy, in my opinion. Silver is the favored proxy for gold. But I think in a good run, which we ought to see in the fourth quarter of this year and the first quarter of next year, we should see platinum and palladium participating as well, particularly if China pulls away from its tighter monetary policy, or let alone if it pulls away from its tight monetary policy and puts a foot on the accelerator. It's going to happen at some point, and then that would generate strong interest in palladium and platinum because of their use in the automobile catalytic converters. And China is now the world's biggest market in terms of car sales, ahead of the U.S. What else on these on crude oil? I think I've touched on that. Fundamentally, I don't think that Brent should be up at this current level, up over 118. But technically, that's exactly where it is, and I'll breathe easier when I see another downward dynamic. I hope to see that relatively soon, as the market's overbought, as I mentioned earlier. But crude oil, and say that's the most important commodity in the world by far, and it's the one that really can change all the other outlooks very quickly. And it's uncomfortably high still at this stage. We're not back into crisis mode, but another $20 to the upside, and we would be. What else? The grain and bean complex, that's certainly important. We had a thumping big shakeout last week, and prices have steadied, and the week before, prices have steadied this week. I've got some items on corn that I've just posted on the website a short while ago, including a good Morgan Stanley report. My feeling is that the USDA was way over optimistic in terms of what the corn yield is going to be like. And I've explained why in my comment. I'm very aware that this audio is running on and on, and I don't want to abuse the privilege any further. So I'll just wish you an absolutely splendid weekend. All the best.